Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network Sunday, October 15th, 2017. This is episode 1431. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Capterra. Find solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 400 categories of business software and thousands of ratings and reviews from software users just like you. Did I mention it's free? Visit capterra.com/techguy today. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech, computers, the internet, you know, all that stuff, home theater, digital photography. Our photo guru, Chris Marquardt, joins us in a couple of hours. You know, augmented reality. Of course, a lot about smartphones these days. Got the new Apple iPhone 8 waiting, you know, in 12 days. We can order the iPhone 10. Don't call it the X. Tim Cook will get all head up. He was speaking at a conference the other day. Well, he was sitting at a, he was sitting and he had his phone kind of was inching out of his pocket and then fell out in the cushion. I guess he was wearing slippery slacks. And everybody said, "Oh, Tim's carrying an iPhone 10. We've actually started seeing him around. Apple employees are allowed to carry them around. Because I guess, you know, this is the last stages of testing in some ways. Although I don't, if they found something wrong at this point, I don't know if they could do anything about it. Be very interesting to see. So theoretically, if you want an iPhone 10, show of hands. I'm curious how many people didn't buy an iPhone 8 or don't want a new iPhone. Maybe you're happy with the old iPhone. I know some of you, about three quarters of you probably are Android users, but among the iPhone users, did you skip the 8 because you're waiting for the 10? I think there's people doing that. I asked that on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, and most people said no. I'm not, because remember it starts at $1,000, and if you want, there's two versions. There's a 64 gig storage version that's $1,000, and then what is it? It's like $1,200 for the 256 gig version. It's a lot of money. A lot of money. And Apple says that midnight, 12:01 a.m. Pacific time, on October 27th. 12 days from now, I guess it's a Friday morning, early Friday morning in California, the store will open online and you can all rush in. And I ordered the iPhone 8. You know, I have to get these things as quickly as possible. I don't get a loaner from Apple. I don't want a loaner from Apple. I like to buy my own. Thank you very much. So I get in there. I do. I have to get in there 12:01 or 12:00, 10 seconds, as soon as the store opens, because, that's the only way you get it right away. And so I did do that with the iPhone 8, and I noticed it wasn't difficult. I was on vacation, and it wasn't hard. In fact, I don't know if I think I forgot, because there was an 8-hour, 9-hour time difference. So that meant it was like 9 a.m., and I probably was eating breakfast and I forgot. And then I think it was a little later, maybe an hour later, I went, "Well, shoot, I forgot. Like, let me see if I get one." "Yeah, you can get one. Sure, come on in." There wasn't a virtual line, digital line to get the iPhone 8. So I'm thinking that's kind of an indicator that people are either not upgrading. And frankly, if you have a 6, 6S, 7, you don't probably need the 8. It's fast. It's not that much difference. In fact, if you have a 6 or 6S and you have a headphone jack, you may not want the 8 because you may not want to give up that headphone jack. I know people think I'm crazy when I say that. Apple fans who are never shy to express their opinion sent me an email saying, well, you're just wrong about the headphone jack. Nobody needs that. Well, I beg your pardon. You may not need that. You may not want that. But please don't speak for me. I actually would like a headphone jack, and I know there are a few people who would and who feel like that was, well, that's kind of a loss. Maybe we'll put up with it. I'm putting up with it, but it's not ideal. So people are waiting for the iPhone 10. I think if you're waiting for the iPhone 10, probably most people waiting for the iPhone 10 are waiting for the iPhone 10 because, you know, the cool factor or the status factor. Either they just want to have the coolest phone out there, or they want other people to know they have the coolest phone out there. And as we've talked about before, Apple made it very easy to distinguish an iPhone 10 from the iPhone 8. Doesn't look at all the same. It's got that notch. It's a full size screen, goes edge to edge, all a lot of reasons. Just like on the new Apple Watch, they put a red dot on the stem because otherwise it looks exactly like the old Apple Watch. So they put a red dot on the winding stem. Isn't that funny? They call that the winding stem. That, I don't know. I guess that's, I mean, you don't wind it, but that's what it is. Hey, it wasn't my idea. Apple put it there. On the red dot there, lets the world know in a subtle way. It's not shouting. It's just, yeah, I have the new Apple Watch. Yeah, sure I do. And that little notch, those ears. Yeah, I have the new iPhone. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm cool. I'm hip. I'm with it. Lots of speculation, though, among the analysts. You know, analysts care a lot because they want to know how Apple stock's going to do. And of course, if the iPhone 10 is slow to market, or they can't sell many or can't make many, that will be a big deal for the stock. So the analysts, there's a guy in China, Ming-Chi Kuo. He works, he's probably the best known analyst for covering this, what they call the supply chain, the manufacturing process. He's really, because he's there, he's got ears on the ground. And he says, no, this is hard to make. It's one of the reasons it's not available until November. You order October 27th, you won't get it till November 3rd if you're the first in line. He also says there won't be a lot of them. And the speculation has been that the bulk of the phones Apple can make, and, you know, I don't know, for some reason, I think it's one of those Face ID sensors is a little what they call supply constrained. They can't make them fast enough. The supplier, not Apple. Apple buys them from somebody, but the supplier is having trouble. And this is kind of what the rumor is. And Ming-Chi Kuo says that means it's going to be very constrained supply. At first, it'll be hard to get. We'll find out. 12:01 a.m., October 27th. If I get there, and I ordered. What I did is I went to the Apple Store and I favorited the one I want, so that I can just instantly. There's a lot of strategy in this. It's like planning a battle. Instantly, get into the store, click the button, pay, trying to beat everybody else to the punch, because I know that seconds later it'll say out of stock. You'll get it January 12th, you know, or you'll get it next year in May, you know. That's what it's going to be like. And the speculation is, part of that is because the bulk of these new iPhone 10s will be reserved for China. Apple has been struggling in China. There's some very good Chinese phones from Huawei and ZTE, Xiaomi. These are Chinese companies that produce phones for the Chinese market that are actually outselling the iPhone at this point. And Apple's concerned about that because they need that bump. That's the next big market. They want those billion phones. And so the rumor is, because the Chinese market is apparently, when they buy iPhones, they buy them to show off because it's very expensive there, that's where they're going to sell them in the Chinese market. So I don't know. We'll see. It's all speculation. Apple loves this stuff, right? Because it, you know, gets everybody talking about them, how hot, how strong the demand is, all this stuff. They don't like the part where they can't make them fast enough or they have a problem making them. They don't like that part. But they love the part where the demand is high. People want it. They can't get it. What's your prediction? Jim Tez in our chat room says, the Apple Store will not be overwhelmed on October 27th for the iPhone 10. Buy an iPhone 8. Maybe. I don't know. It's the first time Apple's ever done this. Released one phone and then a month later released another phone. What do you call it? It's the iPhone, and it comes. There's an X, the letter X after it, but Apple wants you to call it 10 because it's the 10th anniversary iPhone, and it's. I don't know. I guess that's the reason. There was no 9. But everybody I talk to says X. It's the iPhone X. The X. So I don't. Apple, you know, you can only push so far in getting people to pronounce it the way you want to. 8888 Ask Leo. Is it the X? Is it the 10? Are you going to buy it? Are you not? 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I try to call it the 10. I really do. No control. I got no control.
For years, people have called this show and said,
"Hey, Leo, how you doing?" Okay, mouse is moving. Keyboard is not. My keyboard's dead. Microsoft skipped 9, too. Is 9, you know, 8 is lucky in China. Is 9 an unlucky number in China? That would be telling. It's not an unlucky number here. They plan their phones for 2 years. The way apparently the way it works with Apple is they have a team that works on that year's phone for 2 years. And so there's two teams. So the team that worked on the iPhone 6, I guess, worked on the – or 6S worked on the iPhone 7 – I mean 8 – and the team that's working on the 7 will work on whatever the next year's iPhone is. So they alternate. But apparently, somebody told me, who I think works at Apple, that the 8 and the 10 were the same team. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask. Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. When you get through on that number, you'll be speaking to this lovely person right here, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning. You came in early, I know, slaving over a hot phone, trying to bake up some guests first. And they're perfectly formed humanoid creations. I'm amazed.
Yeah, I know. We got a few of them.
Who should I which humanoid creation should I start with?
Carl in Goodland, Indiana. He's having some fuzzy font problems.
Fuzzy font? Oh, no.
Problems.
I hate
Hello,
it when
Leo.
That happens. Hi, Carl. How are you? Thank you, Kim.
I'm doing well. Thank you.
What can I do for you?
Well, I've got a 2012 mid-year MacBook Pro with a Retina display.
2012 mid-year MacBook Pro Retina display. Got it.
Okay, and I've been using MacBook Pros for about 15 years now. And my last one died back in January. It was a 2006 running Snow Leopard, I think it is. So, and I have a 26-inch Vizio external display.
It's a computer monitor?
Yes. Yep.
Not a TV.
Not a TV. It's when they were making the glass front displays, kind of like the old cinema displays from Apple.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I switched over to the new MacBook, I noticed that my eyes couldn't see the fonts as well. So my first thought was that I need new glasses, but change of glasses and that didn't change anything.
Oh, wait, we always do that. We always blame ourselves, don't we? And it really isn't your fault. I'm sure it's something to do with the computer. So the screen isn't as clear as it was.
The fonts are fuzzy.
Is it just the fonts? Do images look fine?
Images, it varies depending upon what application I'm using.
Oh, that's interesting. That's
so I do primarily, you know, emailing, text work on there. I do some CAD work as well. And
what is the resolution of that Vizio? Do you know off the top of your head?
Well, right now it says it's scaled at 1920 to 1200, but
so
I try to knock it down.
That's probably the issue. So Apple calls these displays, when they're their displays, high DPI. Actually, that's kind of the
yep.
Actually, Apple calls them Retina. We call them, in the real world, high DPI. That means, you know, these new higher resolution displays. And if you were, in many cases with modern displays, to set them for their native resolution, it would be everything would be really tiny and hard to read because there's so many dots that the icons would be smaller, the fonts would be smaller. So if you it's kind of counterintuitive. You think, oh, I've got a bigger screen and more resolution, everything should be bigger. No. A bigger screen with the same resolution, yes, but the problem is these new big screens have high resolution. And so an icon, which is normally 64 dots by 64 dots, it's the dots get smaller, the icon gets smaller. It's the same 64 by 64. So the way we generally handle that is by doubling, well, actually having the resolution, which doubles the size. So if you're, and that's why what you need to find out is what's the native resolution of that display, and then you need to pick a resolution that's half it. What I think's happened, normal Apple does that all fine. If it were an Apple display, Apple would do that all fine, which is, you know, it, you know how they've changed the display preference pane now. It's, you know, it doesn't tell you what resolution it's going at.
Right, right.
It says this is optimal, you know, default for display. But if it doesn't understand your display, which is possible, it wouldn't know what that is. Are you running scaled or default?
Default.
Okay. Default should be a evenly divisible number, generally half of the actual resolution. So I guess first homework would be to figure out what the native resolution of that Vizio display is. 2660 by 1440 or what?
Right.
And then ideally you would pick, if it's 2660 by 1440, you'd pick half that, 1330 by 770, something like that. There is a control panel that will let you see the actual resolution on your screen. In fact, it's the only way on a modern Macintosh operating system that you can do that, because they, as you see in the control panel, they don't show you anymore.
Right.
So I'm trying to remember the name of this. Let me just real quickly look. System preference. It's a special system preference for native display resolution. I'm sure that Google will tell me exactly what I'm looking for. I want to say X display or something like that. If you can find that control panel or that system preference pane, that might also help. But I think what you first want to do is figure out what your native is.
Well, I've been doing some investigation on this, and I see a lot of people had problems when they switched to El Cap.
Yeah, well, it's probably not El Capitan precisely. It's just Apple's changed, either doesn't have a driver for that Vizio or has changed the resolution, you know. It's that's, I guess the first thing I would do is try to figure out what your native resolution is and then set, you know, another thing you could do is maybe there is a driver for that Vizio. That's it. Switch Res X. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Scooter X in our chat room. Switch Res X from madrau.com. That would be a useful tool to tell you what your... you could do with that even is just experiment, because it gives
right.
you far more resolutions than Apple does. And then you can say, oh, that's clear. So modern displays often can work at odd number. You know, they don't have to always be a perfectly divisible.
Right.
But,
right.
but you know, it just depends. So that's, I think if everything's, that's why I asked if everything's fuzzy. Your font would be the first one you'd see, because fonts, you know, if it's not crisp, it's really obvious.
Right.
But pictures and other things might also not work well. One of the reasons that doesn't always apply is that Photoshop and some other programs understand Retina displays and will operate, when you look at the picture, at native resolution.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be at a much higher resolution, which is what you want.
Okay.
Anyway, there's a long winded way of saying I think that's the problem, and that's my best guess. All right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Switch Res X. We'll put a link in the show notes for that. It's free, as I remember. Maybe not. TechGuyLabs.com is our website, and it's free. You don't have to pay for that. And if you go there, you'll have a link. We'll put a link up there to madrau.com. So you can quickly click that. In general, that's the idea. I know many of you are doing errands, driving around. You're busy. You don't want to have to pull out a notepad and write things down. So I try to give you all that information directly on the website. Switch Res X from madrau.com. TechGuyLabs.com. By the way, that's free. You don't have to sign up. There's no special requirements I don't want your email. You don't have to pay. Is it $16 for it? That's too bad. I think you probably can try before you buy. I recommend it. It's a good program. It's a very useful program. And it's the only way that I know of. Maybe there's another. Probably there's a terminal command. But it's the easiest way anyway to get the resolution, the variety of resolutions your monitor is capable of on a Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We need some rain here in California. That would sure be a help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Jerry Hatfield, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
Leo, I've got problems here, Leo.
Problems? I've got problems.
For a long time, I was able to listen to your radio podcast on my cell phone. And then all of a sudden, the station apparently dropped out of whatever it was, and I couldn't receive it anymore. So I go online looking at the stations that...
there are so many ways to listen to this show on your phone or on the internet. It's mind-boggling.
Well, let me say this. I have XIIA Live Pro, and...
So is it an Android or an iOS device?
Android.
Okay. So either one, actually. The app I would recommend, and I know my bosses would recommend, is called iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio's owned by by Clear Channel, which owns the Premier Radio Network, which owns this show. And so it's on the iHeartRadio app, as are all the Clear Channel radio stations. What's happened with radio on the internet? It's very interesting. We've gone through, we're in the third stage now. The first stage was everybody, and this was about, 2000, 2001, said, you got to put your stuff on the internet. Remember Real Audio? Remember that? God, it wasn't that long ago. But anyway, lots of radio stations said, yeah, we want people to listen on the internet. That's a good thing. And so they put usually on their website, because by then most stations had a website, they'd put a Real Audio link, and you could listen with the Real Audio player. That didn't work on phones, but remember, in 2000, what did we have? Blackberries. We didn't have much. So then something happened. The radio stations went, whoa, this costs a lot of money. This isn't free. See, if you're a radio station or a TV station or most, traditional terrestrial broadcasters, that is a broadcaster with an antenna, when you put up that tower and you turn on the transmitter, if one person listens or a million people listen or a billion people listen, it costs you exactly the same. The electricity, the tower, the transmitter, all of that, fixed costs, and the costs don't go up with the number of listeners. Exactly the opposite for the internet. The internet's more like magazine publishing. Every person who reads, or a newspaper, every person who reads a newspaper or reads a magazine costs you money because you have to print a copy for them. There's the pass around thing, but we won't talk about that. The idea that you print one copy of a magazine and four people read it. That's, by the way, how magazines stayed in business for some time. Well, we only send out 100,000, but four people read each one, so it's really 400,000. So that radio stations were a little shocked that this wasn't the business model that they were used to, and all of a sudden they're getting bills. And in fact, the more successful their streams are, the more it costs them. So they kind of stopped, a lot of them. They said, no, we're not going to do this. There's got to be a better way. And eventually, new ways of doing it were found. The problem is, of course, advertisers, usually on radio, are local. So they're thrilled if, everybody in Nashua, New Hampshire listens to the show on the internet. That's okay. But they don't care about somebody from Los Angeles, California, listening to a show in Nashua, New Hampshire, because they're not potential customers. That's also changing. Remember, almost every business now is online and customers are available all over the world. Anyway, the whole thing is changing. So we're in the third stage now where stations have come back. But the way they came back was, instead of just putting a Real Audio link on their website, they're making apps. And initially what happened was kind of, there were general apps like TuneIn, which I love, TuneIn Internet Radio. That was one of the oldest. And they just put every station, or there are websites where every station's on it. But the radio station slowly pulled back from that again because it was hard to monetize. So CBS radio stations created the CBS radio app, and that's how you have to listen. iHeartRadio, some of the stations are only on iHeartRadio. Some of them are on both the internet and iHeartRadio. So really, it used to be almost any station, you could figure out a way to do it with TuneIn or some similar system. Now you got to figure out where are they. It's kind of the way TV is too, right? You know, if you buy a Roku, you can get this. If you buy an Apple TV, you can get that. So, long story short, I guess we're in the fourth generation. Because so now you've got to figure out the app. In my case, iHeartRadio, good app. Then there's the podcast thing. And almost every radio station has decided now to do some form of podcasting. Some of it's free. Some of it's subscription, pay behind a paywall, we say. And so podcasting is another way. In fact, my show is not only available on iHeartRadio, depending on the station. If you figure out, you know, some of the stations that carry the show aren't on iHeartRadio, but they're somewhere else, like TuneIn, you could listen that way. You just have to figure it out. Listen to your local station if you can. That helps us. That helps them. That's the best way to listen, even if you do it on the internet. Podcasts, many shows, including this show, are made into podcasts. Many stations take my show and make podcasts out of it. And I make a podcast out of it, which we offer at my podcast network because I have other shows on podcast. That's twit.tv. It stands for This Week in Tech. And so the twit.tv site has... As does our Tech Guy Labs site, actually, has podcasts of this show. It's also on YouTube. And if your phone can't figure out how to get the radio show, you can get it on YouTube. So, as I said at the beginning, there are a lot of ways to get this show. My preferred way is to support your local radio station, of course. Because, you know, without them, there wouldn't be a show. Gary, Buffalo, New York, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Leo. I hope you're doing as well as I was a little while ago.
Oh, what happened?
Well, I got a great deal on a 4K Ultra HD 43-inch TV.
Woohoo!
But it's a Roku TV, and it comes with this Roku remote.
It's a TCL.
Well, now this happens to be an Insignia.
Made by TCL.
Okay, you know what? I've got four Insignias. They're all working. The reason I bought a new one because it's the...
Yeah, well, you can always take it back to Best Buy. Best Buy has a very good return policy. That's their captive brand, Insignia. Is it Best Buy?
I don't want to take it back. I want to figure a way around this.
Okay, so what's going on?
Well, you can't enter a channel directly. In other words, if you're a Channel 5 and you want to watch Channel 55, you got to scroll through 50 channels.
Oh, you can't just type it in on the remote and hit enter.
No, and I loaded this TV into my, Logitech Harmony 700, and it doesn't change the channels that way either. It does everything else. Same thing as the little Roku they give you, but the buttons, you know, 1, 2, those don't work.
You know...
It seems like this is the new...
How much did you pay for that 43-inch TV?
I only paid $180.
Yeah. And I think to save money, they took out the direct channel entry. That's a feature on the remote, but if the remote can't do it, then the Logitech can't do it. The Logitech only duplicates the remote's capabilities.
That's it, yeah.
You're getting the signal directly into the TV?
Well, I actually have one of these RCA DVRs. I have cable.
Here's why I ask. I mean, there's a tuner in the TV. That's the one the remote changes. But there's also tuners in whatever, like the cable box or the DVR, whatever it is you're plugging into the TV. That has a tuner and its own remote. That one you probably can direct enter. So, of course, the trick there would be to change the input on the TV to whatever is giving you your television signal and change the channel on that remote. But I've never heard of a remote not being able to direct enter channels, but it sounds like Insignia has invented it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Yeah, I think Sears is going away, isn't it? I feel like it is. Yeah, no, he knows that, Irvine Rob. He doesn't want to scroll through all the channels. He even said that. I can scroll through channels. I want to enter it directly. Or maybe the remote's broken. Yeah. I mean, we can go farther and dig deeper, but I think that's one to bring to call Best Buy and say, hey.
Hey, how does this work?
Does it? The only TV company I know of that is using Roku is TCL, but maybe, so that's why maybe I'm thinking the Insignia, which is a captive brand for Best Buy. Who knows who makes Insignia? Maybe they're using some TCL panels. Who makes Roku TVs? Find your... Oh, Hitachi, Insignia, TCL, Sharp, RCA, and Hisense. I was wrong. I bought my mom a TCL because it had Roku built into it, which is awesome. So you don't have to have a separate Roku box. So yeah, Insignia is one of those as well. It's great because it makes it easier for them. Yeah, probably would, Mick, but I'm a jerk. I'm a jerky jerk. Mick says I should have been nicer to him and said, well, I didn't laugh. I didn't laugh. Sorry, Mick. I was mean of me. I'm a mean son of a gun. Bad Leroy Brown. Baddest man in the whole dang town. I love this. I spent a little money to get... this is the camera that I was talking about that I love so much. The very, very fancy Leica Q. Ridiculously expensive. But I wanted it to have a nice case. So I got an Italian leather case and strap. Isn't that pretty? Look at this strap. And then what I'm going to do is tape over the red dot so nobody knows. But I think the square thing might be a giveaway, too. Let's tape over that red dot. Isn't that pretty, though? I think Leicas should be elegant. And it does. It looks like a bullwhip. Oh, let's see. Here we go. Directly from the Insignia website. Control your TV with this remote, which features infrared technology for reliable performance. But does it say you can direct enter? Works just like new. But does it? So you're just saying he could buy a new remote, but I don't know I wouldn't buy a new remote. You just go to Best Buy and say your darn remote doesn't work. Right?
I would look at the user manual.
Yeah, look at the manual and see how do I direct enter channels.
Or, yeah, how do you change channels in the manual?
It is a pain to go through all the... Especially if you have 700 channels. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. George in Victor, Montana. Hello, George.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm fine as soon as I figure out what's going on with this phone.
Well, at least you don't have a remote control that you can't enter a channel number into.
I don't watch enough TV to worry about that.
That's good. That's one solution. I don't care. I don't watch TV. So what's going on with your phone?
Okay, my wife's got the iPhone 7, I think, S. It's got like 200 and some odd gigabyte storage or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I've got an older 6.
Okay.
And we keep getting the pop-up, you know, of for the new download of iOS 11.
Yeah.
And we both have the 10, but she's a research person, and so she says that they're having trouble with them on it and that it's draining the batteries and stuff. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I had it on my 7. Works fine. There are people complaining about iOS 11, but I think those are more isolated circumstances. Remember, there's something like 100 million iPhones out there. If even 1/1,000th of 1% have problems, you're going to see hundreds of complaints.
But hey, I know. That's what we always say about things.
But, yeah. So iOS 11 is recommended, but I understand if you don't want to do it right away, But the problem is Apple wants you to do it right away, and that's why they keep saying, hey, 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 hey. How would hey, come on, come on, hey. I don't know how to turn off that. Hey, upgrade.
I don't either.
I don't know. If that's what you're calling, I don't know how to do that. Apple seems to just say, no, you got to upgrade. It's interesting.
Well, I'm not
because,
worried about that.
Yeah, Android has this problem, which people that don't upgrade and often can't upgrade their Android phones, and that opens big security holes. Whenever we see statistics, it's always app. You know, 90% of iPhone users upgrade. Well, now you know why, because they're going to drive you crazy. Once you go there, you can't go back. So I understand your reluctance. I really do. I'll tell you what. We're now at. Let me just check. I think we're at 11.0.2 or 3. I mean, they've put out the kind of conventional wisdom on this is don't do the upgrade right away. Wait until they've fixed the fix.
So
fix the fix. So you don't want 11.0. You don't want 11.01 because that introduces additional problems. You want 11.0.2. And I think we're at 11.0.3 now, which means you're probably any issues that people were having are probably all fixed by now. So unless you – now, it is the case that this is now a requirement that you have all applications have to be 64-bit. So some older applications will stop working or disappear when you go to iOS 11. So it is the case that if you have some special applications you can't live without – do not want to upgrade to iOS 11. So that is something to check. Let me see.
Oh.
Let me see how I can delay. Does anybody in the chat room know? Is there a way to tell the iPhone? No, I don't want it to upgrade. That's something I should find out because your complaint, your question is not at all unusual. It isn't unusual, in fact, to have problems with iOS upgrades. This is a big upgrade. All I can say is I have upgraded my iPhone 7 without problems, without slowdown. Battery life is good.
Okay.
It does fix numerous security issues.
Okay.
Although I imagine you're still getting updates to iOS 10, right, to your security patches for iOS 10, so... That may not be quite enough.
We've already got iOS 10 on our phones.
Right. I think, and as long as you're getting patches to 10, your security is probably fine.
Okay.
Okay, chat room has confirmed what I believe, which is there is no way to stop Apple from nagging you.
That figures. There's got to be someone going to nag me. could I ask one more question?
Yeah, of course.
On my phone, not with my wife, but on mine, I'm on Facebook, and every time somebody posts something on Facebook or whatever, writes something on it, it shows up on my email.
Oh, yeah, you can turn that off.
I can. How do I turn that off?
So that's in your settings for Facebook. There's notification settings, and somehow... the notification setting got turned on that whenever somebody comments on a post that you get an email. That is not what you want, obviously.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So you have to go in your settings to turn that off. By the way, that is like saying you have to go up the Amazon with a machete and find the settings because there are a lot of settings, but it's under notifications.
Okay.
And you actually, under the notification settings, you'll even see something that says email. And you go in, you edit that, and you can say when you'll get email. And mine is set to only notifications about your account, security, and privacy.
Oh, okay.
And so I think that's what you want. You can't get any fewer emails than that. But, yeah, it's good to turn off all these notifications because they'll just drive you nuts.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, right. You don't want that in your email. Yeah. You got enough spam as it is.
Yeah.
Some people want to know if somebody comments on a post. They say, "Send me an email," or send me a text message. You can do that too. But
yeah.
I think you are so smart. go to Facebook when, on your terms, not on their terms. They want those notifications on because they want to kind of give you this, you know, kind of conditioned reflex that you, oh, I got to check Facebook. I got to check Facebook. So you don't have to. Now, well, here's good. Somebody saying, and I think there must be a way to turn off the nags, because if you're a business or a school and you've made the decision for good reason not to upgrade, you should be able to turn that off. You don't want students to be bugged. In our chat room, Comp 101 says, go to Settings, General, Storage, and Manage Storage, and you'll find that it has downloaded in the background, without your permission, the iOS 11 update. And that's why you're getting that notice. It's sitting on your phone. If you delete the update file, it'll stop bugging you until it downloads it again. So you're going to have another 3 GB download at some point. Go to Settings, General, Storage, and then you want to Manage Storage, and you'll look for the iOS 11 update. Deleting that will at least turn off those nags temporarily.
Okay.
All right. Good.
We, a lot but, of help.
Yeah, glad we were able to help you with both those things. It's, you know, I think people let their computers annoy them. They just kind of put up with it.
Yeah, I don't like to use it that much.
Yeah, you don't watch TV, you don't use computers. Well, you must go out fishing or something.
I do. I'm a fly fisherman. I go every day.
If you live in Montana and you're not a fly fisherman, you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
Oh, does a river run through it? I think so. Montana is so beautiful. So beautiful.
I'm about 4 miles from a river.
Oh, man. You're living the life. Of course you don't. Forget that Facebook and that TV. You got something more important to do.
Yep, you're right. I do. I always have something more important to do.
Yeah. You're a normal human. Not like us slaves to our screens.
Well, when you get ready to retire, you'll get to do it.
I can't wait. My excuse now is I have to do it for work.
Oh, yeah. Work always does that.
Yeah. Got to do it for work. Oh.
You do.
I'm going to get me a fly reel and go out there and some waders. I don't even try to catch the fish. Just stand there.
No, well, that's half the time. I don't care if I catch a fish or not. Being there.
Hey, a pleasure talking to you, George.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, so that's good advice. It's a little annoying, especially if you're on limited bandwidth, because that iOS 11 update's pretty big. So it's downloading it in the background. And as soon as it's got it, it says, okay, we can do it. Let's come on. Let's do it. Let's back up. Come on. And the only way to do that, to stop that, is to go and delete the file. But at some point, it's going to get back online and download it again. Oh, man. You know what? It will not do that if you're out in the middle of a river fly fishing. I can almost promise you it's going to wait till you're home on Wi-Fi. I have to say, I like iOS 11. I love the features. In fact, I jumped on it. I'm on the early, you know, users, the beta version of it. I like it a lot. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. You stick around, though. We've got lots more to talk about. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't forget the website. All the information is there, techguylabs.com. That's free, no sign up. We also put audio and video of the show after the fact right up there, too. So if you miss an episode, you can listen there, techguylabs.com. Yeah, it's got to wait to Wi-Fi because, and I bet you if there's a setting that says you're metered Wi-Fi, I bet you that's the long-term fix. Is there a way to do that? Let me look. Or just turn off Wi-Fi. Wonder if there's a way. You can on Windows, you can say, hey, my Wi-Fi is metered. I don't want you doing anything with it. It's too expensive. Oh, I wonder if you, there's got to be a way to do this. Because there's people who quite legitimately do not want to upgrade. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. Oh, I should talk about this. I want to tell you about Capterra because this is going to save me a lot of calls. Capterra is a directory of software solutions for business. A free, wide open, just for you directory. Capterra.com/techguy. And so if you're in a business and you're looking for software to run your medical office, your yoga studio, or your, you know, I mean, go on and on. There's 400 categories of business software. You could just Google it. But this is the one to use. So 400 plus categories. I mean, I'm talking about all kinds of stuff. A/B testing, accounting, affiliate software, advocacy software, assisted living software, run a bakery, run a brewery, run car rental, call centers, conference schedule, on and on and on. I mean, this thing is everything. But the beauty part is, not only does it have all of these products, thousands of products, it's got 200,000 software user reviews. Let's say church software, right? Guy was calling and wants to. So there's, as you might imagine, a lot of church software out there. Tons. But here's the part I like. Look on that right side. You can say, oh, I only see ones that have 4-star or better reviews. I want it to be web-based. And I would really like calendar management, child check-in, donation management, volunteer management, and worship planning. I don't even know. But I'm just checking stuff. That narrows it down. Now we got 15 instead of hundreds. Seraphim, CDM Plus, Faith Teams. You could say, well, the Seraphim looks good. I like that. Let me add that to my comparison. See, I'm building a comparison chart down at the bottom. Da Pulse, Imagine Mobile Church, and Shining Light. Those all look good, but I want to compare them. So now it's going to, on the fly, make a chart for you with all the features, how it installs, what operating system, and all the reviews. And there are more than 200,000 reviews on here by verified actual users, people like you and me. This is just awesome, and it's free. Capterra makes it easy to find the software solution you need for your business. Whether you're a startup looking to keep better track of customers or a nonprofit hoping to have a record fundraiser this year or a business that simply needs better payroll software, Capterra's got you covered. There's no charge. No salesman will call. It's amazing. Just visit capterra.com/techguy. Stop Googling it. Don't call me. Go to Capterra. Capterra.com/techguy. Learn how to run your brewery. Love it. Oh, look at that. Roku TV doesn't currently support direct channel entry. What the what? Okay, there's the solution. Nope, Roku TV does not do it. What? That's okay. There you go. So it's not a bug. It's a feature. They invented it. It seems kind of dumb. That's the first thing I do when I turn on my TV, because I know, you know, I want to look at the news. So I don't even, as soon as I turn on the TV and the AV receiver on the remote, I immediately enter the channel number I want to go to. 787. Your firewall doesn't allow app downloads. That is cool, Boz. Well, it was a 2-year-old post. Well, 2015. Sounds like it's still true, which means this is a feature. It's not a bug. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number if you want to call with a question, a comment, a suggestion. I think a lot of what I do here on the show is really more, I'm like Dr. Laura. It's more emotional support. Like, I don't know if I can fix your problem, but at least I can let you know you're not alone. And we all have to suffer with this. Now go take on the day. That kind of thing, you know, just kind of relaxing, and it's you know, it's kind of, misery loves company. So if you listen to this show, and you know, you all suffer to some degree from technology. It's what I mentioned to our last caller. You don't want to put up with these annoyances, but we do, because there's big annoyances which you fix, but then there's the little annoyances, you know, like that chair that squeaks. They're just little ones. And there's a lot of them with technology. You know, they just, you know, my computer, it does this weird thing, but I can, you know, click the box and then it goes away. And I was just talking to to Kim Schaffer, and she was saying, I upgraded iOS 11. I wish I didn't because, and this is one of those things no one's going to ever fix. Sorry, Kim. Sometimes when I get a message, I get a notification. Sometimes I don't. My Fitbit buzzes, but the phone itself doesn't pop up a notification. Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And that's, by the way, the worst kind of computer problem. Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. We call it an intermittent problem. And the problem is, as soon as you bring it to the Apple Store, it'll work fine. The genius will say, well, if it happens again, come back. And they call him a genius. So we all put up with a little bit of this. And I guess my advice is, to the degree that you can, maybe set aside an hour a week to, make a note of the little annoyances and set aside a little bit of time, not a lot, every week to kind of trim them, get them. Because it's death by a thousand paper cuts. No individual annoyance by itself is going to drive you nuts. But in aggregate, when you combine them all, the sum total is a pain and stress. And it's, it could shorten your life. It's like letting these computer annoyances pile up is like smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. I just made that up. There's no evidence of that at all. But it feels that way, doesn't it? It does. Let's go to St. Cloud, Florida. Jack is on the line. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Jack.
I'm calling because I'm doing animate. I'm learning how to do animation, and I'm currently using a program called Blender. And I wanted to know some things, like some other programs I probably should get for making animations with this program. And I like also I wanted to know a class. Like
Blender is a power tool. Blender is amazing, and I love it that you're using Blender. Are you on Linux or Windows? What are you on?
I'm on a Mac.
Okay, so Blender is what we call an open source program. That means it was created by people out of the goodness of their heart, and they don't charge you money for it, and they keep it up to date, and it's a power tool. The only problem with Blender at all, at least for people like me, you have a nimble, young and nimble mind, is it's hard to use. Do you find it hard to use?
Yeah, it gets hard at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
But if you learn Blender and you become good at Blender, man, you have a skill that you can take to the bank. I am not kidding. In fact, think about it. In the future, animation is going to continue to be huge, not just in movies, but everywhere. And the ability to do animation is a really great skill. So when you're using Blender to do animation, what kinds of animation are you doing?
Like, do you mean like what kind of style of animation?
What are you doing? Are you doing cartoons? Are you doing 3D rendering animation? Like, are you doing Pixar style animation?
That's what I want to learn. That's what I'm trying to learn how to do.
Yeah.
But that's why I kind of want a recommendation for like software as in a class that I could take, like a good class, because there are 71 nights until Christmas. And
You're impressive, Jack. So, of course, you've probably seen the tutorials at blender.org, but you want to go to the next step beyond that. And, of course, as with everything in the world, there are YouTube videos on how to do it. But I'm going to recommend there's a very good deal right now at Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y, which is – Udemy's a MOOC, massively online courseware. And the idea is it's like college-level courses, but you take them online. Some are free. You've probably tried Khan Academy classes, right? I'm going to tell you one that's going to cost you $10 right now. Normally it's $200, but it's $10 right now. It's a Blender course at Udemy. 77,000 people are taking it. When I say massively online, that means a lot of people. But at that price, at $10, and the thing that's cool about this is you get a lot. It's 48 hours of on-demand video, but you also get to talk to an instructor. There's kind of tests and things like that. And because it's only $10, and you can take it as long as you need, right? So,
yeah.
So that's the beauty of this. It's $10, but you have it forever. So Udemy is very well known for their courses, and I would look at some of their other courses. They have other courses on sale right now.
I've seen Unity ones, like for programming video games.
Yep. And there's some very simple ones, like here's creating a 3D soda can in Blender, step by step. But I would look at their courses, because that's one of the best places to take courses. And if it's I think you're smart. There are other programs that can do what you want to do, but I think mastering Blender, it's like if you want, you know, if you're a musician, you want to learn every instrument, you could, but wouldn't it be best to master one instrument first and then learn more? So let's master Blender.
I already am.
Yeah. So master Blender, I think that's very, very good. It's a deep program. You'll get a lot of value out of. Here's the other thing. Once you master doing this in Blender, those skills will translate to all the other professional grade
tools. Maya?
Like Maya, exactly. And Pixar has their own tools. But I think if you make some great audition materials for Blender, are you in high school right now?
No, I'm actually in middle school. I'm 12 years old.
Awesome. By the time you get in high school, you could apply. You'll have a great audition reel in Blender, and you could send it off to Pixar and say, "I want to be an intern next summer in Emeryville, California." And you could, and I bet you could do it. And that's the next step, right? The first step is take these classes, make a great audition reel, make a lot of stuff, have fun with it. The next step is then go to where the masters are. You know, John Lasseter, the guy who created those great movies, Toy Story, was the director there. He studied.
Really good.
He worked at Disney. Studied under Ub Iwerks, who is considered the legend, one of the great animators of all time. And one of the reasons John is so good at storytelling and animation is he studied at the foot of masters. And so that's the next step for you, an internship somewhere like Pixar or Disney. You're maybe a little closer to Disney. You probably get over to Orlando and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Have fun. I'm proud of you. You're doing great. Send me some animations, Leo. Just anytime you feel like it, leo@techguylabs.com. If you do something cool, just send me a link, okay?
Okay.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
I bet you're way ahead of all the other kids in eighth grade.
I don't.
Yeah, you can be. Sometimes you can boast. Don't do it all the time. You can do it to me. You can say, "Yeah, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good." Leo Laporte. The tech guy. I think he's pretty good. Udemy's the one that offers those Google courses, right? But boy, they're doing a good deal right now. Over 55,000 courses, $10 each, but only for a few more hours. So that is now would be a really good time. But that's what's really exciting, if you ask me, about this internet era, is you can be a smart, motivated 12-year-old and get professional-grade materials and learn, you know, for $10 or free. If you went to the Pasadena Art Center to learn that, or Art Institute to learn that, it'd be tens of thousands of dollars, right? Udemy, Cosmic Ray. Udemy. I will, I tell you what I'll do. I will paste it into the show notes. $10 for their complete Blender course. How about that? Jump Tech and Whale, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Scott in Orange County is next. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
Ah, it's going good. How are you?
I'm great.
What is up in beautiful Orange County today?
So I went to Best Buy a couple of days ago, and
are they still around?
Yeah, we got a good one.
Okay, good.
And you walk in there, and there's so much that's changed with all of the smart devices for the home.
Yeah.
And so I talked to one of the managers. I said, you know, tell me the hottest new technology that's going to blow my mind. So he takes me into the bowels of that Magnolia room where they got all the...
Yeah, that's their high-end AV stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So we go into the audio part. And he goes, sit down. I sit in the middle of the little audio room. And he goes, this is going to totally blow your mind. And he put it on one of those ultra 4K DVDs. And it did blow my mind.
Yeah, they look good, don't they?
Well, no, the audio.
Oh, the audio.
Dolby Atmos.
Atmos, right? It's coming from up above.
Yeah.
Sound from on high.
It's near Newport Beach, where we got a lot of, you know, multi-million-dollar houses. So people are throwing down and spending $125,000.
No, that's crazy talk. You don't need that.
Just to outfit the audio in their cool, you know.
So many of the new receivers, TVs, and UHD players support Atmos. In fact, I'm seeing, if I'm not mistaken, Atmos sound on some of the streaming stuff I'm getting. I can't remember if it was Google or Netflix or Vudu or where, but Atmos is a standard now. It is, you know, we're used to surround sound 5.1, which is five speakers, left, right, center, and then two surround speakers plus a sub. That's the 0.1. There's 7.1 or 7.2, two subs and four surrounds, two at your ears and two behind you. And that's more like a movie theater. But many movie theaters have now upgraded to this newest thing, which includes sound from above. Now, that guy was a little bit messing with you because he had something that had Atmos sound on it. And it, you know, was it helicopters or something that made sense, right? But if you think about it, I mean, movies are made with Atmos now, but not how many movies have something from above that you need to hear?
Right. So, but my point is, so he takes me out on the floor, and Samsung has a sound bar that, like, 1,000 marked down to 800. And, you know, those ceilings are high, 30 feet maybe, right?
Yeah.
And it was ridiculously good, you know, so for $800.
Well, that's not bad.
It sounded fantastic, right?
Yeah,
I'm like, okay, I'll spend $800 for that kind of sound.
Right. So.
But he was talking about this new DVD player that you've got. It's got two HDMI, like one for the audio and one for the video. Have you heard about those?
Yeah, I don't know why you would do that. One for the audio, one for the video. The single HDMI cable carries everything perfectly well. All the video and all the audio. I can't think of a reason why you'd need two. That's interesting. Here's the problem with high-end audio and video. There's a lot of gimmickry. And some of it is not really justified by the technology. I'm not going to say for sure that dual HDMI doesn't do anything, but I'd be surprised. Here we go, audiogurus.com has an article, using dual HDMI outputs is now possible on more and more AV receivers. Some products are simply doubling the HDMI output and allowing you to run parallel output. Well, that's a big deal, right? My question is independent signal, now this is for zone 2, that doesn't sound like the idea is it will improve anything. It's just for more flexibility. So, and you know, and I'll tell you what. Here's the deal I'll make you now, Scott. We got lots of people listening, including audio video experts, people with golden ears. If you're listening and you go, no, Leo, there's a reason, or you're going, yes, Leo, it's a gimmick. 8888 ask Leo. Should Scott take a look at these dual HDMI cables? Would that be worth getting for better audio? I don't think it would be. I think there's more than enough bandwidth on an HDMI cable to provide full quality audio and video from a UHD HDR player and Dolby Atmos sound. There's a lot of bandwidth on that. You know, I mean, you can go. There's companies, some of the monster companies, selling cables that have, you know, super-duper gold-plated HDMI cables with extra gauge connections for $180 or more that don't do anything different or better than a $995 cable from Radio Shack. So I'm not sure you really need dual HDMI. But I will stand corrected if somebody calls and tells us we can fix this. I just know that there's a lot of gimmickry for sale that maybe isn't necessary. Somebody was saying that the Best Buys in his town are closing down. I worry. You see this. I mean, malls vacant, stores closing. There are many towns that don't even have a bookstore anymore. And all of this, I think you can lay right at the feet of Amazon. Online shopping, online commerce in general, but Amazon in particular, they are moving in hard against the mom-and-pop retail. You know, go downtown and buy something. Go buy your $159 gold-plated, oxygen-free HDMI cables downtown. At least, you know, give them some of that profit. 888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, joins us. Time for some photography tips. Stay right here. That's the Muezzin's call for geeks. Okay, Chris, we're going to put you in the big screen behind me. If a UHD player has only one HDMI port, stay away. Really? Why, Beatmaster?
All right. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
That is good. I have a URL for you.
Oh.
For this segment, yes. tfttf.com/tidyup.
T-I-D-Y-U-P.
Yep.
Our 14-year-old Michael is studying German.
Oh, is he? I didn't switch on to hear that, but
I'm very proud of him. It's a hard language for us. That is
awesome.
Speakers,
if he ever needs a training subject, let me know.
I will. I think we're going to end up visiting Germany September for Oktoberfest, and
you have to.
Yeah, bring him there, have some fun.
I'll be happy to make some time.
I don't know why. I guess because, you know, his name is Kenzel, which is German. His part of his family is German, so I think he feels like it's his heritage. But of course, like everybody, he's a mutt, but that's cool.
It's an important language to learn, isn't it?
It is. Getting more important all the time.
Not as important as English, but hey.
Hey, you know, it used to be everybody had to learn French, but not anymore. So.
And it sounds funny.
It's hard. It's a hard language.
Well, so I do have a segment where I want to talk about tidying up pictures, and I have six examples here for six different things I want to talk about.
I see them. So, I've got them. They're open. They're on my desktop. I shall show them as you go.
You can go in order. You can pick anyone you like. I'm just going to give a few examples for a few methods to get better photos.
Cool. I brought in my because I'm thinking I want to simplify. I have too many cameras. Too many good cameras, so I brought the little Leica Q, just trying to simplify.
That's the other way of tidying up. That's tidying up the camera cabinet, you know?
My camera cabinet is bulging. But the thing I like, this is a street shooter. I mean, it's only 28 millimeters, so you really, it's not an all-purpose. Sure. It doesn't have a zoom or anything. Boy, is this a great street shooter, though. And I just love how the aesthetics of it, I just love.
Oh, yeah.
Just love it.
But that's the most important. You need to, if you want to be good with a camera, it has to be a tool that you also love using.
Well, what made me think of this is a guy called yesterday. He wants to buy a camera for his daughter, and he wants a simple interface. And I said, well, I'm not going to recommend it because it's going to set you back $4,000. But the Leica Q interface is very simple. It's all knobs.
It's really the thing. If you go by the specs and go by the best spec camera, but it doesn't feel right for you, then it's not the camera for you.
Exactly.
So go and use the camera that feels right and that you love using.
Yep.
That will certainly reflect in the kind of pictures you take and the quality of pictures you will take.
Because really, it's just a tool. It's not.
It is.
Yeah. It doesn't make, you know. I've been for a long time chasing the dream of having a great camera that will make me a better photographer.
There was this article on Petapixel, kind of a satire. It was titled "Camera a Photographer Switches to a Different Camera Brand and Instantly Becomes a Master Photographer."
Yes, I wish it were, but not the story of my life. No.
Well, that's just not the way it
works. Alas, alas.
Is there one thing I can? Can I plug, or can we plug discoverlightroom.com at the end of the?
Yeah, you got the new
segment.
Course. You bet.
Because that's out brand new. Well, it's an update on the old one, but it's certainly good.
You mentioned it last week, and we'll do it again this week.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chris Marquardt is here, our favorite photography guru. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am very well indeed. I look to you for leadership because I love photography. But I can't seem to get better at it, and I feel like with your help, you actually have a new Lightroom. I have the old Lightroom course. I saw you have a new one. What is it? Discover Lightroom. What's it called?
DiscoverLightroom.com. It's based on Lightroom CC on the Creative Cloud version, and it's pretty much an updated version of the old one, which is from 2014. So we have included a lot of new things and new features.
I did the whole old one, and it was immensely useful. Lightroom is Adobe's kind of semi-pro, high-end, program for organizing, sorting, and by the way,
it does everything.
Yeah, your photos. Yeah, it's really, really good. Good. DiscoverLightroom.com for the new version. So what are we going to do today, Chris?
Well, you know how you often, beginners in photography often end up taking pictures, and some are good and some are not good, and they don't really know which one, or if they shoot a good one, they will know it for sure, but they won't really know why that is.
That's me, and raising my hand. Yep.
That's perfectly normal. But there are ways to kind of go about it in a bit of a more deliberate fashion. And one of the things that is really going to help your photography is learning to tidy up your images, because that is often the problem. You have, images that are not very tidy. And I've picked out different areas.
It's just a picture. Well,
let's look at a few and see what you can do to kind of get a bit more, tidiness in the picture. And there are different areas that we can look at. For example, one thing that is an instant way to do something for your pictures is to make tighter crops. Get closer or crop the picture afterwards. Get rid of stuff that is in the way that distracts from what you want to show. Get in tight. That is one of the key things for better photography. Another one is, just reduce the amount of stuff in the picture. Fewer objects. Just take out things by not including them. Yeah. That is a very simple way to simplify. Just count the amount of stuff in the photo and then try to recompose it. Try to change the perspective. Try to look in a different direction. Move around it and see how it looks from a different angle. And this way, reduce the amount of stuff in the photo. And that's like tidying up your room, right?
Yeah.
Tidy up.
Yeah.
Reduce the amount of stuff, clutter.
I do often have too many things in there. It's distracting. The person doesn't, your viewer doesn't know what to look at.
And if you reduce the amount of stuff, it gets much easier. It gets much easier.
Yeah.
Another way is rhythm and repetition. If you see things that sort of mirror each other, repeat each other, that adds order to a picture. If you include similar things in a picture, and the best thing that you can do there is you have five different things in a picture that are exactly the same, and then a sixth one that is just a slight little bit different.
One of these things.
That's the one that will
like
then pop out.
You're right. That's good. I like it. Yeah.
And that helps create rhythm in the picture. It's like a musical rhythm. If you have a steady rhythm, that gives it order. And the same is true for photos. Another way to help you tidy up your photos is by finding frames to frame the stuff in the picture. Frames are a bit like cubby holes, you know, where you put stuff in, and that gives the things in your photo, your subjects, your important stuff in a photo, a good place to sit in a picture. So try to find something that goes around. It doesn't have to be a literal frame. It can be a couple of trees left and right. It can be just a partial frame. It can be a doorway. It can be a window. There are so many ways that you can frame things in your photos that gives them a good place to sit.
Yes.
Is another one that helps is lines. If you find lines in your picture that lead somewhere to a subject, then you probably have a winner, especially if you do not have too many things in the photo, because you can of course combine all those. You can take stuff out, fewer objects in there, maybe get a bit tighter and get it this way, and then find good lines that lead to your subject, and that in turn gives a bit of guidance to the viewer and helps you tidy up.
This is a little geometry. Both lines and frames are kind of, and even repetition is a little bit like geometry.
And you know what repetition does? Repetition creates lines as well, because you can pretty much connect the dots and create a line this way.
Right.
So repetition, it all kind of ties into each other. Now, one of the overlooked things, but I think really important ones, again, last but not least, the way to tidy up is to reduce the amount of colors in your photo.
Oh, that's interesting.
If you try to find things that aren't maybe monochrome, maybe two colors only, and then shoot that, that will almost always create a stronger
picture.
You're
not saying make a black and white picture. It could be a color picture, but just with fewer
colors. Well, there are these color key photos where people take a black and white photo and then one piece of it they leave in color, like a red rose on a black and white photo. That's one way to do it, but I try to find these kind of things out there without having to modify them afterwards. So if I find something that has like a strong primer color, or maybe a very subdued color. Let's look at something. You have a backdrop of concrete, and then on top of that, something that is a bright color. That will make a winner photo.
All right, I'm gonna try to synthesize. You've got these great six tips. In a way, all of it is about directing your viewer's attention, making it easier for your viewer to know what's important. Tighter crops. What was the second one?
Fewer objects. Rhythm, repetition, frames, lines, fewer colors.
It's all about aiming the guy's eye, your viewer's eye, and telling her what to look at, right?
It comes down to exactly that. You want to simplify the photo in this way. It just becomes obvious what it's about.
Yeah.
There's no ambiguity. There's no doubt what the photo is about.
It's true in life, too. Clutter is distracting.
True.
Clutter. Clutter makes it hard to get anything done.
I'm not going to share my desk now, okay?
Yeah, as the king of clutter, I know this. Just look at my office. It's cluttered.
There's a reason the camera's pointing this way and not this way.
Yeah. That's, by the way, again, one of the beautiful things about photography is that, and one of the things a photographer does is make a choice about what to include, but what not to include.
You can decide to not show the clutter, yeah.
Yeah, by framing a picture, you're saying, in effect, this is what's important. And so you really have to have a strong kind of voice about all of that. And that's what these tools kind of help you do, have a strong voice about. This is what I want you to look at. This is what's important. This is why this is an image that was worth making. I love
it. Exactly.
I think that's – I'm going to try to remember that when I go out and shoot pictures from our assignment. Which is?
The current assignment is...
You need a post-it note on your screen.
I have it here. I just didn't scroll to the right place on my screen.
I need a post-it.
The current assignment is shadow.
Shadow, that's right.
Shadow.
Oh, this really actually is... This is perfect. You can do all those things with shadow.
Absolutely. You can even concentrate on shadow. You could, for example, just concentrate on shadows without showing the subject.
Yeah.
That's a good way to tidy up a photo.
Perfect.
And make it clear what it's about.
So the idea here is there's no contest, there's no prize. It's just an assignment to get you out there shooting. Look for pictures that illustrate the idea. Shadow, pick your finest each week. Tag it with the word shadow, upload it to Flickr, and submit it to our tech guy group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will thank you. And in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks maybe, Chris will pick three to talk about. But the process is what's important. Take some pictures. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris will be back next week with more photo tips. I found that was a good one. We'll put that all in the show notes. In fact, let me get those images because he gave us some images to illustrate each of those ideas, and we'll get those in the show notes too, techguylabs.com. So, James, I'll give you the link with the album. Actually, it's tfttf.com/tidyup. Easy enough. Let's go to Providence, North Carolina. Right now, everybody, all of us, let's go. Hop on the bus. Jay's there waiting for us. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Leo. We have room, believe it or not, in the northeast corner.
Okay, good. I'll be right there.
But, yeah, I'm working on a 34-month-old HP, and the Windows recovery drive seemed to do the trick when it had little oddities before. The troubleshooting things by Microsoft never have seemed to work right for it, so I just activate the recovery drive.
The recovery tools, sometimes they give you a little registry thing, or they do some troubleshooting, and yeah, that's been my experience too. They're often not sufficient to fix up whatever's a mess. So the nice thing is it's now fairly easy to restore Windows and start over.
Do I need to get a CD?
A CD?
Yes, because the drive itself just seems to be not quite.
Oh, I see what you're doing. You're doing it from the recovery partition on the hard drive.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I love to do, and you're right, you do want to get a external way to do this, and for a couple of reasons. What if that hard drive dies? The whole thing goes, including the recovery partition. It's convenient, and I'd continue to use the recovery partition, but everybody who is relying on a recovery partition should really consider making backup media. And these days, I don't know if it's a CD. I think probably the best way to do it is go out and get... Microsoft says, I think, an 8 gig, I usually use something bigger, a 16 or 32 gig USB key. They're not expensive. And you can create the recovery media on there. You may have, depending on the manufacturer, OEMs do this differently, but in some cases, the manufacturer of your computer, your HP, will have in the menu a create recovery disk item or create boot disk item. So look for that. See if they have a tool to do that. If they don't, Microsoft does. And I've mentioned it many times before. You can Google Microsoft Media Creation Tool. And it is a download. You're on Windows 10, I presume.
Yes.
Yeah. They actually have it for Windows 7, I think, as well, maybe even 8. But it's a download that you put on a USB key. It makes a USB key that is a pure version, not the HP version, a pure version. In general, you'd want to use the HP version because it had drivers and HP-specific software. Somebody's saying it's in the maintenance. It's under maintenance in the start menu if you haven't modified your start menu. I kind of like having a clean Windows install because then I don't have all the stuff HP put on there. Microsoft still puts stuff on there, unfortunately, like download Candy Crush Soda, stuff like that, which drives me nuts. But with the clean install, you would have to go to the HP website and download updated drivers for your particular machine. And that's not a bad thing to do. You can even, once you make the USB key, if you want to do it prophylactically, you can go get the drivers and put them on that USB key. And then you'll have not only a clean start, but you'll have everything you need to get it up and running at full speed. I think it's a good idea to have that. It's fine to continue to use the recovery partition, but you can easily think of scenarios where the recovery partition's gone as well, like a hard drive failure. So absolutely, everybody needs to have a USB key that they can restore Windows with. And of course, if you don't and your computer dies, you get your buddy to make one, or you get another. If you have another computer, you can make one from there. But I love the idea of doing a clean install. In fact, I do clean installs on my systems pretty regularly, every 6 months or so. Okay, Jay. What is going on that you don't like?
Well, it varies. It seems to vary each time. Right now, I don't know for sure if I'm even getting the thing to update. I did Windows Defender updated.
Yeah, you need updates. So, in fact, there's a big update coming. Microsoft just released it to the wild this week. They call it the Fall Creators Update, or FCU for short, which is not a good name, because they don't even call this fall in other countries. They call it autumn. And, of course, in the southern hemisphere, it's spring. But for whatever reason, Maybe I'll just use the number. It's 1709. So most people will be on the Spring Creators Update 1703, and you should look for in the next few weeks or months, depending on your system. HPs tend to be a little slower than others. A big update, the Spring Creators Update. Once that comes, I'm sorry, the Fall Creators Update. Once that comes out, you probably will want to make a new media, use the media creation tool to make a new USB key with the latest version of Windows. And you probably, if you're not getting updates, you probably really want to do this. Those updates are vital to your security. Incidentally, the other thing you probably want to know is you don't need a serial number for Windows 10. The way Microsoft's doing it now, once you install Windows 10 on a machine and it's activated, and you can quickly see under the system properties if it's activated. Once you see that it's activated, that means Microsoft's, you're cleared for Windows 10. And they have in their database all the machines, literally, all the machines that are cleared for Windows 10. They call it an entitlement. You're entitled to Windows 10. Whether you bought the machine with Windows 10 on it or you took advantage of the free upgrade from Windows 7 or 8.1, you are now entitled to Windows 10, and you will no longer have to give them a serial number or anything. You just install it. It contacts the activation server. The activation server says, is that the same machine as before? Oh, yeah, it is. No problem. That helps a lot as well. I really like that. I wonder if the media creation tool is up to date with the Fall Creators Update yet. I wonder if it has 1709 on it. There's usually a lag between the time Microsoft releases the big update. This is the second big update of the year. They say they want to do two or three every year. We'll see. There's usually a lag. Should you get the Fall Creators Update? Yeah, probably. It's based, unlike the last update, the spring update, and the anniversary update, which was a nightmare. I think Microsoft's beta tested this enough with enough machines, millions of machines, and the response has been very positive. There are no major problems with it that I know of. Of course, inevitably, somebody will have some weird setup that doesn't work, but I think it's safe to upgrade at this point. If you get the upgrade offer, I'd say go ahead and do it. Chris in Ohio, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Here's my question here. Right now, I'm doing live stream for my church.
Nice.
And the person that is head of the department, she uses Wirecast Go.
Yeah,
for
very
her,
nice.
iPhone.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I use an Android phone. So I'm trying to find out, is there like a similar app or something? Just something similar to it, so everything can be, be kind of like streamlined. Because the thing about Wirecast Go is that we put like images and logos during
yeah.
the services and stuff.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I just
it's all on the fly. So
right? Isn't that awesome? I just saw a really slick boy. I wish I could. I know how to find it. Tool for doing exactly that that works Android and iOS so that you can create live streams. And what it uses, and tell me if this is what you want, because I don't know if this is what you're looking for. It works on an Android device or an iOS device, but then it uses camera phones as the cameras.
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yes. Which is a very clever way of really, nowadays camera phones are so good. That they give you great video, and they're powerful enough to actually be a switcher, which is
right.
really kind of remarkable. That it'd be nice if you had an Android tablet because you like a bigger screen.
Actually, I do. So
that's perfect. Let me see if I can find the name of this. We were talking about it on one of our shows just the other day, and I don't know if I made a note of it or not. I bet I didn't. Yep, I didn't. But is it Switcher Studio? Is that it, James DeRuvo? Let me look for it. We have to take a break for the top of the hour anyway. I will have it by the time we get out of news at the top of the hour. So keep listening, or you can go to techguylabs.com, and you can get all the information. Yeah, okay. I think it is. I think it's Switcher Studio. That sounds about right. Use iPhones, iPads. Oh, it looks like it's iOS only. Let's find one that's Android. We'll find it. Keep listening, and we'll put it at the website, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Hey, let me talk a little bit about our other sponsor on the show, Texture. Really was a great thing for me when we were traveling. That's a great thing for me all the time. Texture is basically Netflix for magazines. It is 200 plus of the best magazines in the world for one low monthly fee. I love it. You pick the magazines that are your favorites and it'll automatically download them. So you don't even have to think ahead to download the ones you want. And of course, if you see something you're interested in, and look, this is one of the things I love about Texture, is the curated section. Stories just for you, new and noteworthy, weekend reads, top 10 reads, long reads for the weekend, collections you want. Are you really into Halloween pet costumes? Hey, who isn't? So they've got five different magazines, National Geographic Kid, Family Circle, Martha Stewart, Living, Woman's Day, In Touch Weekly, each with articles about doggy dress-up. Now, here's the key on this. Notice it's now downloading it. So you can read any of the 200 magazines, and you see how quickly it downloads. This is InTouch magazine. I do not automatically download it. It is everything. Oh, I have to add it to my favorites. Okay, so I can continue to read it. There we go. It is everything that would be in the print magazine, not only the current newsstand edition, but back issues, plus features you don't get in magazines. Like video, for instance. And this is one of the things I really love. I can zoom in on the page, see more. If you're looking at photo magazines like Shutterbug or National Geographic, it's better than the print because you zoom in, you don't get a bunch of dots. It's not screened. Okay, and here's an ad for something. That's pretty funny. Oh, notice that. I really like that feature, too. In fact, that's using the iPad in portrait mode, and it really is then much more like a magazine. I'm just a huge fan of Texture. TEXTURE.com/twit. TEXTURE.com, texture.com/twit. And you can try it free. It is what your tablet or phone, for that matter, was made for. Texture.com/twit. There's always great reading on my iPad, thanks to Texture, and on my iPhone, too. By the way, you can put it on five different devices, which means you can share it with your family. My library, full of great magazines. Now In Touch. Actually, I probably don't want that every week. Dwell, I read. I love Consumer Reports, Ad Week, because it's my business. Maxim, Saver for cooking recipes, The Atlantic, Sound and Vision for stereo gear. Texture.com/twit. The New Yorker, Vanity Fair. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. That's me. I'm the tech guy, and you're you. And this is the show where we get together and we talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones. Smartwatches, anybody? Kind of a dying category. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. I'll help you buy. I'm glad to help spend your money. I can help you fix. A lot of people have questions like that. I can guide you with technology. And if I don't know the answer, somebody's sure to in our vast listening audience, our fabulous chat room at irc.twit.tv. So give us a ring, 8888 Ask Leo. Our last caller was looking for software he could use. This is such a amazing time. He wants to have software he can use to basically, you know, create a television studio on a tablet, on an Android device. And the cameras are other Android phones. He adds titles. He does switching. He does pan, tilt, zoom, all the things you want to do. In what would when I started in television, the switching board alone cost over $1 million. The cameras used in television studios cost $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 each. Now you can do a better job with free or inexpensive software that runs on your phone and tablet. What? So there is a new one that my friend Jeff Jarvis mentioned. He teaches journalism in the graduate school at the City University of New York. And he's really on top of the latest trends in journalism, and that's one of the new trends, is that you could do a TV station with mobile devices. What the? And a lot of people are, oh, by the way, do you need to build a transmitter and a tower? No. You can stream it live on YouTube or Facebook. So if you're a church, here's a perfect example. And you know, you've got activities, or you've got sermons, you've got church functions that you want to get to parishioners who can't be there in person. Either they're not in town or they're, you know, unable to get out of the house or for whatever reason. You can do that inexpensively and easily as long as you have an internet connection, a few phones, smartphones, and somebody's willing to sit at the tablet and say, take one, take two, take three. The one Jeff mentioned that's, I think, fairly new is called Cinemaker, C-I-N-A-M-A-K-E-R. It's free, and then there's a pro version that's $500, but it has graphics. It lets you do up to four cameras using four different smartphones. You can do editing. You can do live switching. All the things in a multi-million dollar television studio. Now, here's the bad news. It's right now available on iOS. They say it's coming soon to Android, but it isn't quite out on Android. There are a lot of companies doing that. He mentioned Wirecast. Wirecast Studio is pretty amazing. We actually use that. We use some hardware stuff for my podcast because we do video versions of my podcast. So we spent, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And even that seemed a great deal compared to a professional studio. I get professional grade quality using something called a TriCaster. And I think they start at $5,000, but we have something a little bit more elaborate and a little bit more expensive. And then instead of having camera operators, we just have many cameras. We bought 40 consumer-grade Canon camcorders and put them all over the place. And so you don't have to have a camera operator aiming. You just have cameras aimed everywhere you could conceivably want a shot, and then you switch to that camera. It works pretty well. It cost me a lot of money, but you can do it even cheaper now. And so if you're a church, man, all you need is four volunteers with iPhones or Android phones, and you're done. Pretty impressive. So I would keep an eye on Cinemaker. This looks really cool. But we'll put a link to a number of those products in the website, like Switcher Studio, Live Stream Studio, so forth. I don't use it that much, but I use a camera from Live Stream called the Mevo, M-E-V-O. And the idea is this is a single camera that can kind of be like multiple cameras, just a little doohickey, and it comes with software. It can stream to Facebook Live, Livestream, YouTube, Periscope, or Twitter. And the idea behind this was kind of clever. Works with, by the way, Android or iOS, but it's kind of clever because the idea behind this is the camera in this is 4K. Now, you don't want to stream 4K. That's too tough for most people to download. Too big. But the camera's 4K, but you stream 1080p, which means, in effect, one camera is four different cameras. Right? Because that's what a 4K display is. It's four 1080p displays. So you can zoom. It'll follow people's faces. It's really remarkable. It has its own microphone built in, although you can use external microphones for it. That's actually a little bit harder, the audio, than it is the video for all of these, incidentally. I really like this Mevo camera. This would work well, I think, in a church. It would work well in any situation where you don't have a lot of different places you want to look. The example they give is a cooking show. Perfect for that. But you could also use it for, you know, a company meeting, that kind of thing. So that's from Livestream, which is a streaming company, and it's GetMevo, GetMevo.com. There are a lot of really good systems now. This has transformed how television works. Everybody could be a TV station now. Now all you need is talent or content. Alan in Michigan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alan.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's great. How are you?
Great. Hey, I wanted some advice from you.
Yes.
My wife is head of a nonprofit that supplies housing for people with developmental disabilities.
Fantastic.
They're building a new home, six bedrooms. They'll have six adults, all in wheelchairs.
Fantastic. That's great.
And they're trying to consider what tech they should include in the house. And maybe some things that the builder might be considering that they don't need it.
Right. Well, of course, Wi-Fi is going to be a given. You want internet access in the house. But I presume each of the six residents will want cable television in their rooms.
Yeah, they'll all have their own televisions. They're thinking about going, kind of cutting the cord. And
yeah, there's nothing as good as wired still to this day. If you've got a builder and you're building it right now, my suggestion still is not put any wiring in necessarily, but at least put conduit. Put a tube leading around so that you could easily pull a cable or Ethernet or whatever you needed. That's kind of future-proofing, making it possible to put fiber in there for all you know. That's the next thing. I do think connectivity is very important, and you're right. You could probably do everything you want to do via Wi-Fi as long as you have enough bandwidth coming into the house. You have to assume six Netflix. You'd have to have enough for six Netflix streams. So that's 300 megabits. But as long as you have enough of that, then probably you probably don't need wiring. If you're going to talk about wiring, then conduit's easy because if you're putting it in, you leave enough room to pull anything else, and it's easy to pull cable through it. Well, the hard thing is opening the walls after you've drywalled them.
What about some of the Echo or Google products?
I love that idea. I'm hearing a lot of people. Using voice-activated devices. A lot of people with various disabilities using voice-activated devices. That's a great idea. In fact, if you could put an Echo Show, which is the Echo with the screen on it, in every room, they could use it as an intercom system. You'd get an intercom system automatically, but they can also use it to watch video. This actually would be an interesting flexible solution. The Echo Show is Amazon's Echo that includes a 7-inch display on it. It stands on its own, so you don't have to hold it, which for some people would be an advantage. Some people can't hold a tablet easily. It has kind of all the information you need. It could be alarms. It could be weather reports. You could play video on it. And you can use it as an Echo. You could do room-to-room calling with it. I think that's a great idea. Echo Show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, YouTube TV is an interesting idea for television. You don't need cable TV if you're in an area. Let me see. You're in, I'm not sure where in Michigan, but if you're in an area where you can get, YouTube allows, has local TV in some markets. Here in San Francisco Bay Area, for instance, I can watch local stations on my YouTube TV. And that's cheap and really works well, and you can have up to five people using that at a time. So there's a lot of...
They were thinking about controlling the lights in the home and that.
That's cool. Yes. So an Echo would be good for that. Echo seems to be right now anyway. I mean, who knows in 5 years, Google may come on strong. Apple may. Although, of late, I've heard from a number of people who say, oh, I don't want to develop for Apple Home. It's too complicated. Everybody seems to be sporting Echo, though. So, for instance, if you got... Sylvania has now... voice-controlled lights, Hue, of course, from Philips. If you got those and they had an Echo Show in each room, then the resident could say to the Echo Show, turn off the lights or turn on the lights with their voice, and that would work. They could check the front door for, a doorbell. They could have cameras monitoring the outside, all of which would be visible on the Echo Show screen, and it could all be done by voice. I think that's really interesting. What a good idea.
In the Echo Show, that's the one that you can use as an intercom, so someone could talk to a person in a bedroom without going in.
Yep, any Echo can do that. That's a feature of the Echoes now. The reason I like the Show is because it has a built-in screen. There's a new Echo, actually, they just released. The Show is a little pricey, but the new Echo they just released is a smaller screen. It's like an alarm clock. They've really kind of, the Echo ecosystem has gotten very rich. There's a lot of different choices. I have Echo Shows. I got one for my mom, and she loves it. She loves it. And we can talk to each other. So the Echo Spot is like a round, like it almost looks like an alarm clock. That's $129.99. The Show's a little expensive, $229.99. Although if you think that's their TV, their intercom, they control the lights, all of that stuff, then $229.99 per room is not too bad for six residents.
Sure.
Yeah. It's like a...
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah. I'm glad you're thinking this way. That would be very cool. Thanks for the call.
They want to integrate tech as much as they can.
Absolutely. What a great idea. Thanks for the call. You got me. Now you got me thinking. There's all sorts of things you could do. You got me. You got me going. I do believe the Echo is the future of home automation. At least right now, it's the winner right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now I got my heads. I'm all excited now by our last caller. He's building a group home for six disabled residents. And he said, what technology should we consider? And once he mentioned home automation, which, of course, if you're disabled, if you're in a chair, it's great to be able to turn the lights off and on with your voice. Putting an Echo in each room would be amazing. You put an Echo Show, the one with a screen, and they could, you know, not only turn off and on lights, they could see the front door. They could see what's going on in the backyard. They could use as an intercom system to call each other. And Amazon has just added the ability to make phone calls with the Echo to any phone. So that's a phone. That one device, admittedly, $230 is not cheap, but that one device can do so much. It's got pretty good speakers. It's their music player. It's a 7-inch screen. It's, you know, I mean, we're not talking 4K cinema display, but a 7-inch screen, it's good enough. I watch Jimmy Fallon's monologue in the morning. It's part of my flash briefing in the morning. But you can watch YouTube, any YouTube video on. Oh, no, you can't. Oh, there's a little tussle going on between Google and Amazon, and they just a couple of weeks ago stopped letting people watch YouTube on the Echo Show. That will change. They got to work that out. But you can watch Amazon Prime videos, TV shows. There's a lot you can do with it. It's pretty amazing. That's a nice device. And I love the idea of voice control. You can unlock, you know, you can literally, you could set it up with a Ring video doorbell, let's say, which lets you see your front door, and one of the automated locks, a Schlage automated lock, and you could literally say, show me the front door, hear the doorbell ring. Okay, answer the front door, see the person on your screen, say, oh, hi, Joe, let me let you in, and say, Echo, open the front door, boom. All of that, much more simply than wiring in intercoms and wiring in door locks and buzzers and all of that stuff. This is the future. If you're starting from the beginning, if you're starting from scratch, I think the sky's the limit. I'm very excited about it. People are always asking me, I wish they wouldn't, what's the next big thing, Leo? What's happening? And, you know, I usually don't have much to say. I don't know. It's, you know, get a new phone. But of late, I've been able to say, I really think Echo, Amazon Echo, and these voice assistants in general are the next big thing. The idea of being able to talk to your house and get it to do stuff. I don't see it so much I don't talk to my phone much. I don't talk in the office, you know, with Microsoft Windows. You can talk to Windows using Cortana. I don't do that much. Maybe I'm self-conscious. If there's people around, you feel kind of dopey. If there's noise, you don't want to do it. But for some reason, sitting in my house, in the privacy of my own home, I talk to my stuff all the time. Well, I've always done that. Now, at least, it answers. Paul in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul. Did I push the button properly? I think I did. Paul. Hello? Hey, there's Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
What can I do for you on this fine day?
Well, we've talked a lot. I heard you talk a lot about future tech, and now I'm trying to help my dad. He keeps asking me, Paul, I still got problems with my existing equipment. So yeah. He's got his fancy smart TV, and he watches a lot of over-the-air shows, but now some of them get later, like 10 o'clock, and he wants to go to bed, so he'd like to record it. And so I'm puzzled. I don't know how to answer that, because I was like, so remember, it's over-the-air. He's willing to buy a DVD, DVR recorder or hard drive. Well,
there are over-the-air DVRs. TiVo has an over-the-air DVR. Channel Master is very popular. Silicon Dust makes the HD Home Run. All three of those, you know, TiVo's known for working with cable boxes, but they have an over-the-air. What you're looking for is OTA, over-the-air TiVo.
And no subscription.
That's not going to be TiVo. Yeah,
I want it to be like the old days.
Yeah, TiVo costs you a lot of money for the cable guide. So, yeah, Channel Master does not have a subscription. They make DVRs that are just like, you know, your cable company or your TiVo DVR. They're just a box. He has an antenna, I guess?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So he'll either split the antenna into the channel master or have the TV go through the channel master to his television. And the channel master is just like any DVR. If he can handle a DVR, you know, using the remote to set recordings, things like that, he can totally do that.
So perfect. I'll look into channel master.
Yeah.
The other second part of his question, of course, the old people, but I too have this one. We get thousands of robocalls, and I'd like to buy a device so much that would, hey, when the phone would ring, and then it would say, press one to leave a, you know, press one to get to the person. So if I could do that, I know half these robocalls would just fall off. Are there any machines that force you to press a number?
I'm sure there are machines, but I'm going to give you some solutions that are purely digital. It's not perfect. I use Google Voice to do this, but the problem with that's a free service from Google. You can have, but you'll get a new number, and that new number is the number you want everybody to use, and that has all sorts of nice features. In fact, any digital switchboard service, and there are many of them, Grasshopper and Ring Central, and I can go on and on and on, any one of these will allow you to do things like screen calls. So with my Google Voice, if somebody calls me that is not in my address book, it says, what's your name? They record their name, and then it rings my phone, and it says, oh, you know, Paul's on the line, and I can decide whether to answer it or not. And you're right. That works wonders to get rid of robocalls, mostly because robots don't do anything. They just sit there. However, the problem with that is it's not your current number. It's a new number from Google Voice. Although, if you're willing to spend some money, I think it's $10, $20, they will port your number to Google Voice. So you could take your existing home phone number, make it a Google Voice number.
As a one-time deal.
Yeah. You can port it out as well. This is required by the FCC, number portability. Then I wanted to recommend a service that might be better than that, which is called NomoRobo, NomoRobo.com. The downside of this is you have to share your phone number with them. Calls go through them, and people who use it love it. You won't get any more robocalls. NomoRobo.
That probably has a monthly fee, where Google Voice doesn't, right?
Yeah. It's not too expensive. Google Voice is free, a one-time fee if you want to port your phone number over to it. I actually love Google Voice. To me, Google Voice solves all my problems. It's the number I give out. It's the number on my business card. You can have different voicemail messages for different groups of people. So I have one voicemail message for family, one for friends, one for business associates. I have, if they're not in my address book, you can actually just say, duh, I don't want to get any calls that are not in my address book. Or you can ask them to announce themselves. There's a lot of...
Right. So if it's a doctor or somebody, then they would announce them.
Yeah. It's the only thing that drives me crazy. My doctor uses call blocking. So I don't... If it were up to me, I would never answer an unidentified call, right? I want to know who's calling. And if I don't recognize the number, I'm not going to answer it. But unfortunately, with blocked caller ID, I have to answer it because my physician will call with blocked caller ID. I wish he wouldn't. There's some good solutions for you, though. Everybody's dying from this, you know, robocalling thing. It's a terrible situation. The FCC is not really doing a very good job of preventing it, so we've got to do our own thing. NomoRobo.
Okay, well, great.
Yep.
I'll either try that or Google Voice. Thanks.
I love Google Voice. I do. There's a little learning curve, but not much. It's the easiest of all these digital switchboard products. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, here's a hardware device. CPR V5000. So this might be more what you were talking about. I was not aware of this. Oh, look at this. It's got a big red button that says block it. So this is a $100 product that sits between you and your phone, I guess. And you... it blocks all robocalls, political calls, scam calls, unwanted calls, block all nuisance calls. You know what? Let me order this. Well, the problem is I don't have a landline. Well, not a landline I use anyway. It's for our burglar alarm. Okay. 5,000 scam numbers pre-programmed. plus the ability to block a further 1,500 numbers or area codes at the touch of a button. You know, I could do that because I have my my Google Voice number has a 302 area code, a Baltimore area code. And I know whenever I get a call from that area code that that's a scam caller doing, you know, neighbor spoofing, as they say. Number two blocking function, block a number by entering #2 on any DECT handset. Those are those wireless handsets connected to the telephone base. It will reject all calls shown as international, reject all calls shown as unavailable out of area. That's the one, you know, I couldn't do because my doctor would use that. It will reject all calls shown as private. That's pretty cool, pretty cool. And I love the big red block now button. That's got to be satisfying. If you buy it direct from them, it's $90. CPR call blocker. We'll put that in our show notes, too. It's a number one bestseller. Here's the website. Call Blocker USA. Oh, I got to give them a big plug. That's awesome. CPR call blocker, $89.99, 1 year standard free. Oh, no, that's the warranty. There's no subscription. Okay, good. I kind of wish there were, because what I'd love to do is update that scam number database, because that changes all the time. Pretty positive reviews. They make other devices. They make one that's $50, a little simpler. But I want the big red button. Block! Block it now! Love it. I don't have a phone to use this with. Would be cool to have that. Phone companies could do a better job, I think. Yeah, they're internet calls, but they could do a better job. Lately, they have been on the smartphones, but all of the carriers, at least the ones I use, you know, on my T-Mobile, say suspected spam. I think that's what it says. Something. It says scam likely. Scam likely. Well, it turns out I one of the reasons I love doing this show is I learn every single day. Every single day. There are hardware call blockers. So I have a couple for you. There's one from callblockerusa.com called the CPR call blocker. It's $89.99. I love the big red button that says block now. The idea is you put this, hook this up to your phone jack and then hook it up to a phone. It works great with a wireless phone as well as wired. It blocks robocalls. It has a 5,000 number database that's pre-programmed in there. I don't know how useful that would be because, of course, these guys can spoof their numbers. In fact, the latest thing is to come from your area code, sometimes even your exchange, you know, the first three digits of your phone number. The idea is it tricks you. Oh, that must be my neighbor calling. No. No, it's a scam. They allow you to block international calls, private calls, out-of-area calls. Blocks calls from weird numbers. Every once in a while, I get calls from 000. You ever get those? This will be blocked. So that's $89.99 per phone. Per phone, of course. But if you have a cordless phone, you could put your cordless phone base into this, and then all the cordless phones would work. And then there's a company called Digitone. I haven't tried either of these. I'm not recommending. I'm just mentioning them. Although, based on the reviews, I think they both work. Digitone Communications makes also a call blocker, the Pro Series blocker. Block any call from anywhere. That's $80. So there are hardware solutions in addition. I know about the digital ones because I actually don't have a landline phone. Well, that's not technically true. I have a landline phone for our burglar alarm, but I don't ever use it. These days, people don't. I think when you move, you really think twice. Do I need a landline? And I think there are reasons for emergency reasons. 911 works better with a landline and so forth. But many of us are paying for mobile phones. Why have that and a landline, right? My phone works everywhere. So there's some hardware solutions, and of course I had mentioned the digital solutions. Now we continue on to Fountain, Colorado, and Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
Bonjour,
bonjour Mike.
Comment ça va?
Ça va bien, et tu?
Bien, très bien.
So you're gonna let me know why some receivers have dual HDMI out.
Not receivers. It was the UHD player.
Blu-ray players. Okay.
The reason being that some legacy receivers that have HDMI do not support HDMI 2.0a, which is required to pass through HDR.
Got it. So there, that is the newer HDMI standard that is a higher bitrate standard.
Right.
And you need the higher bitrate because you're sending a lot more information down the tube.
Right. So if you have a 4K TV that has HDMI 2.0a, but your receiver is 1.4a, you plug the single cable routine, it's not going to work. It's going to switch the TV to standard definition.
Now, if you have an old AV receiver, it's not a 4K receiver.
That's right.
So are you going to get 4K anyway? I mean, I think
you don't pass the... That's why you use the audio out from the HDMI player to your receiver, because that's 1.4A.
Got it.
So you'll get your...
And the second one goes to your TV directly.
Right, and you take the video to the TV directly.
You know, if you buy a 4K TV, you really should consider upgrading everything to 4K.
I have so much legacy stuff.
Really? Yeah.
Reel-to-reel machines and all
that. Oh, don't get rid of those. Those are awesome.
Oh, yeah. But, no, I don't do that. Yeah. I have yet to buy myself a UHD player, but you might want to check out Nebraska Furniture Mart.
Okay.
For a Philips player. It's the first sub-$100 UHD player I've seen.
Whoa!
It's $99.99.
That's a great price. That's amazing.
Well, it's first generation, which is actually third generation. All the UHD players are actually third generation devices.
Yes.
But it has an audio out and an HDMI video out, and that's it. It doesn't support... your SPID, SPIDIF doesn't support anything else. That's it.
It also doesn't look like it supports HDR. They don't mention HDR anymore.
No,
oh, yeah,
they
it
don't.
Says HDR support. Okay.
There you go.
Okay, so maybe it does.
That's a pretty good deal.
Boy, $99, it sure is. That's awesome. Yeah, once I got a 4K TV, I'm the guy who traded everything in and got 4K receiver.
I can't afford that.
4K, it's kind of a shock because you forget that, wait a minute, now I have to get my 4K content into the 4K TV.
Well, I bought one of the Samsungs that had the Evolution Box upgrade.
That helps.
Oh, big time. Because I get HDR Lite.
Nice. Yeah, I have a Samsung OLED with an Evolution Box. I have to look at that. So
yeah.
you get a firmware update that gives it more capabilities?
Yes.
Very clever. I was wondering why they did that box.
Well, they knew some other stuff was coming down the pike,
it's
and
upgradable.
They weren't sure.
Yeah.
And it upgraded to HDMI 2.0a. They'd already put the hardware in for that. They just had to upgrade it back in 2014 when I bought the TV. And then it also supports HDCP 2.2.
So to be clear, unless you are saddled with a speaker that doesn't support the latest HDMI standard, there's no other reason to have dual HDMI ports on your UHD player.
If you have a newer receiver that supports 2.0a,
you're good.
Golden.
You're good.
If you don't, because it's end-to-end. Your player inquires or your receiver what other stuff's plugged in.
Yeah, no.
If it isn't correct.
That's the copy protection part, too, of course,
yes,
HDCP.
It'll keep you 1080 standard definition.
Yep. Hey, I'm so glad you called. See, I knew there was somebody out there who knew the answer, and it was you, Mike. Thank you.
Well, that's all right. I've watched Scott Wilkinson often.
Oh, he probably talked about it, huh?
Yeah.
See, I should listen more carefully. Thank you.
Well, you know, and I'm sorry you had to let his program go. But
well, he will appear on this show every week.
And on Saturdays, yep. That's why I want. Yep.
And we bumped up his fee for that to help out a little bit because I know losing a show, you know, is a financial burden as well.
Indeed. Yeah. And sorry to hear about Father Robert leaving in 8 months.
These are all people the radio audience doesn't know who they are. They're all people on the podcast. Actually, they know who Scott is. Father Robert's another one of our podcast hosts. And he is a Jesuit priest. They call him the digital Jesuit. He's the biggest geek I've ever met. He's really an expert in so many areas. He's been great for our podcasts. But he does answer to a higher authority.
Yes.
And when the Vatican calls, you don't really say...
Yes.
No. But I have to say, I'm looking forward to having an in with the Vatican. So that's where, you know, it's a...
Yeah, well, especially if he gets that steampunk laptop over there.
Yeah, so this was an off-the-air comment. Obviously, you heard about it, Mike. I had bought some years ago for a great expense a crazy modified laptop. It was a standard Toshiba laptop. But there was a guy who used to steampunk these things, and it had old electric a manual typewriter keys, and it had beautiful woodwork. It really looked cool. And inadvertently, I left it behind when we moved studios. Thank goodness Father Robert spotted it and snagged it.
Well, I only wished I were in the area when you moved studios.
I know. I think we left some good stuff behind, apparently.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate your call and clarifying the dual HDMI. That makes a lot of sense. It's not any audio advantage. It's not better in any way. It's really to support older equipment that can't work with the newer UHD signals. Got it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's why this show is really great, not because of me, but because of you, because of our audience. There's not many questions we can't answer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Okay, let me really be clear. Padre is not gone till September of next year. He announced it a trifle prematurely, but that's his prerogative. But he did get the call back to Rome, negotiated with them. They said, all right, you don't have to come to Rome till September. So he will be with us through August 2018. And we are actively looking for somebody to take over Twyatt and know-how from him, of course, because I want to keep doing those shows. So he's not gone. He just did the new screensavers with me yesterday. We talked a little bit about it on that show if you want to see more. But he is not leaving yet. September 2018, okay? But he's going to have a nice long goodbye. That's the good news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. Oh, my gosh. Is it almost over? It is. It's sad. But I'll be back next week. Don't worry. Let's see. From West L.A., Surin is on the line. Hi, Surin.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Doing fine. I have a bit of an unusual problem.
Okay.
Sorry for the noise, by the way. My Google Gmail account isn't getting the two-step authentication code I should be normally getting. And I get that two-step code through my Google Voice. The message is supposed to come through that. And all of a sudden, suddenly, it stopped.
Huh. So, by the way, kudos for turning that on. Two-step authentication, you may be familiar with this with your bank. Many services now do this, many websites, Twitter, Facebook, Google, where you log in as normal with your email and your password, but then it says, okay, good, now we're going to send a text message to your number, and you'll have to enter that six-digit code in to verify that's you. And why it's two factors, it means something you know, which is your password, but something you have, which is your smartphone, two different. There's a third factor, which is something you are, biometrics, so fingerprint, stuff like that. Any two of the three really makes a big difference. Here's what I would suggest. First of all, it's insecure and not a good idea. And it may be that Google stopped doing it, sending these second factor numbers through SMS. Because, and we've seen this happen time and time again, people can spoof you and get your text messages. They call the phone company and they tell them a tale of woe, and all of a sudden the phone company says, oh, I'm so sorry, here's a new SIM. We've seen it happen again and again. In fact, to the point where the National Institute, NIST, of Standards and Time, is that what NIST stands for, has said in its recommendations, we do no longer recommend text message-based second-factor authentication. So what I would do is go into your Google and say, I don't want text-based. They may have even, for this reason, stopped doing it. There are new ways Google has of doing it. The easiest way, of course, is putting a Google Authenticator app on your phone. That means you literally do have to have this phone, because the app generates that six-digit code, and you need to have it on the phone to see it. Even better, and Google's just introduced this, and this is what I use, Google, you can use the Google app on an Android phone or an iOS phone, and Google will send a notification to that app that says, are you trying to log in, yes or no? That's the most secure way to do it. Better than a text message, much. Even better than Authenticator, because somebody could steal your secret number. But that text message really, I mean, the notification is as easy, in fact, easier than a text message, because you don't have to enter any numbers. You just tap, yes, that's me. Microsoft does this as well. They're doing it now with their Authenticator app. So when I log into my Microsoft account, instead of getting a six-digit code, the Authenticator app on my phone says, are you trying to log in? You say, yes. That's the best way to do it. So I'm not sure why it broke. It may, in fact, be that Google has decided not to support that anymore. I would hope so. The sad thing is, most banks still do it via SMS text message. And I think the reasoning is, well, our users are normal. We can't require them to have a smartphone. That's reasonable. Inertia. So they're still using what is considered an insecure method. There's another method Google allows that would work with your Google Voice, which is to call you with the number. They actually call that phone number. But that would have the same problem an SMS message does, which is if somebody has spoofed your phone number, if they've stolen your number and put it on their phone, they'll get that call, not you. So I strongly suggest you switch either to an Authenticator app or, better yet, turn on the login feature. All of this is in the Google security settings. That's the best way to do it. You can't assume that the phone number is attached to you, I guess, is the reason that NIST has deprecated that method. Last call of the day, Victor, Carlsbad. Hi, Victor.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Victor. Welcome.
I am a long, long, long time listener, second time caller.
Oh, it's about time.
Sorry.
I missed you. I've missed you, dude. What's up?
I'm a professional photographer. Nice. I listen to iHeartRadio, mostly KFI.
Nice.
On my original iPad.
Uh-oh.
Just a few days ago, it stops working. I'm looking at it right now. It starts to... the little comes up and about to play, and then it says, audio stream is unavailable, connection lost.
Oh,
it works
nuts.
Fine on my newer iPad. Works fine on my all my different iPhones. I'm an Apple.
What's the latest version of iOS you can get on that first generation iPad?
Oh, let me take a look. It is iOS. I think it's like 5 something. No, here it is. About. It is iOS. Version 5.1.1.
I'm going to guess that they updated iHeartRadio and it no longer works with that old of a version.
That's exactly. So that's my comment. So my question is, I have this beautiful original iPad. What can I do with it now? Is there anything that's useful that's still, is it now a museum piece?
It's, you know what's sad? It works just as well as the day you got it.
Yes, it does. It's beautiful.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Fresh. Yep.
And if you just use apps that came and were never updated, it would be fine. It would be fast. So this is a kind of unfortunate built-in obsolescence the tech industry indulges in, and I don't like it, because that iPad 1 is now going to end up in landfill.
No.
No.
My Apple Museum shelf.
Yeah, well, keep it. And there are, and the good news is there's still lots of stuff you can do with it. There are even places where you can download older versions. So.
Okay.
I would look at the App Store. Go to the iHeartRadio app. I've seen on the App Store this message. The current version requires iOS whatever or later, but you can download the last compatible version. Now, I believe that's something iHeartRadio has to do. I don't think Apple does that.
So I have to go to the iHeartRadio.
Try to go to the App Store. First of all, delete iHeartRadio from your iPad.
Okay.
Then go to the App Store and try to re-download it. And if, cross your fingers, they've made two versions available, the folks at iHeartRadio, my company, Clear Channel, you'll be offered the one that works with your iPad. And that would be the prudent thing for them to do, unless maybe they couldn't, they don't want to support the stream type or what. I mean, sometimes these things happen. You know, you can't expect old hardware and software to be supported forever. That's just the fact. But it's a shame because it isn't that it wore out. You know, when you get a new car, you can drive your car till it wears out. They don't change the gas formulation every 5 years, but that's not how it works in the digital world. Sad to say. Hey, that does it for me. I've worn out. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. See you next time. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.